Then agenda item C, which is general discussion. Is there any general discussion from members of the commission or the director?
So,
well, I see on the agenda that it says follow up on wildlife topics from the March meeting.
Yes, this is Kelly. I have a number of, a lot of input on that. I was just going to wait and see if there's other things that commissioners wanted to hit first or I can launch.
So this is Commissioner Thorburn. I'll just report that Commissioner Gravel and I just spent a couple of days attending the Region 1 and 2 and co-manager Caldwell Confederated Tribes meeting. It's an annual meeting that the two regions hold with our co-manager. Discuss the first day usually discuss fish issues and the second day discuss wildlife issues. It really is a strong partnership with great communication. I think it's been built through these annual meetings in part, plus all of our working relationships. For me, the really exciting thing that came out of it is, as you're probably aware, the co-manager tribes of Lake Roosevelt have for years been working with our efforts included to bring migratory fish into the lake. And it is going to happen this year. There's going to be a translocation of a few spring Chinook. There's still a few obstacles that are being worked through, but they think they're going to meet the schedule. They're going to bring a few spring Chinook into Rufus Woods, and then they're going to bring sockeye for ceremonial purposes to the Sandpoil Basin. So everybody's pretty excited to see this happening because there's been a lot of years of discussion, many, many agencies involved in requiring approval, including at the federal level. So it's pretty exciting.
Are these adult fish or juvenile?
They'll be adults. Mostly to be harvested, but well, actually, the Chinook, I think they're hoping to have as spawners too. There's some good spawning ground actually in the main stem in Rufus Woods.
I have a question about that, not about Lake Roosevelt, but one of the things that I'm getting questions about, and I'm not quite sure how to answer them from any educated point of view, is what the Caldwells are doing with the wolves up there and the hunts. Was that discussed?
Oh, yes. Yeah, so they've actually been going through an entire wildlife hunting rule simplification, very similar to what we're doing mostly with our fish pamphlet. The wolf management fits in with that, but also their council got involved. The council weighs in pretty heavily in terms of their natural resource management. They have met their population objectives for wolves, so they're no longer managing wolves as any sort of classified species or game species. So they that means, as they do with all of their game species, they have an open. So the focus of their hunting is subsistence, And they have an open season year-round, general season year-round for that purpose, for game species, including wolves. One of the things that their wildlife manager emphasized, it's not a huge harvest. You know, it's a small population, and the purpose of hunting truly is subsistence there. So, so that's where they are with wolves. They've met their population objectives. They're managing it now entirely as game. They they took, I think, three wolves. They harvested three wolves, I think Rich said, last year, because they had increased their take number this year, and now have made this change to just match all how they manage all other game.
Well, I, for one, look forward to hearing more about that. One of the takeaways from the Spokane meeting for me was that we should look to some of the co-managers' practices. Maybe things are always greener on the other, you know, side of the fence, but I heard that more than once, so I'd like to possibly talk more about that maybe in our newly formed Wolf Committee.
It's, you know, that's a lot of what this discussion is in these meetings with the Colvilles. It's a different world. You know, we talked about livestock depredation, and they said, you know, our message to producers is if you graze on the reservation, it's at your own risk. So they don't take any responsibility for supporting the producers financially in terms of wolf deterrence. That's entirely up to a grazer who uses the reservation lands, and some do and some don't. So it's a really different world. they do some really good management, and a huge focus on habitat management and sort of integrated approaches. It's really interesting to sit and listen to them.
Well, that's the idea of being able to sit down for 2 days with all of the interests represented just seems amazing to me. And if we do that over here, for instance, in my neck of the woods, it would be regions 5 and 6. I don't know about it, so I'd like to follow up on that a bit more as well. But thanks to you guys for going and attending those meetings. Anybody else have anything to say before the commissioner, or I mean before the director?
Sure. This is Jay.
Go ahead.
And there again, I'm sure I'm going to want to chime in after Kelly's makes his statements, but this is just was really brought to light because I needed to run a guy down on the Grand Ronde this morning and dump him off on and pick up a loader. I've been at this is my 34th year of plowing snow and being down there, and this is beyond a doubt the worst winter for winter kill I've ever seen. They're just dropping like elk and deer, just dropping like flies down there. It's just sickening. And so I know we've got a pretty heavy lift next week, and it's way too late to make any mass changes, and I'm sure it's just part of the world, but we need to keep that in the back of our mind that this has been a tough, tough year on every animal that's been out. So when we're setting policies, we need to keep it in the back of our minds to be as conservative as a biologist will let us be. It's mind-boggling down there. So, okay, I'll shut up and we'll listen to Mr. Kelly.
Thank you for that, Jim.
Commissioner Mecca-Isaac.
Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Madam Vice Chair. And in the vein of giving some report before we get into the April hunting options, I'd like to report to the Commission about a meeting that took place on Thursday, March 7th, regarding the Washington proposal to significantly increase prey for southern resident killer whales via enhancing hatchery releases of Chinook salmon smolts. This meeting took place during a break at March Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting to accommodate people's schedules who were coming together at that time. The participants in the meeting included myself, our director, Kelly Suswind, and Ron Warren for Washington. For the federal government, Barry Thom, the West Coast Regional Administrator, was there. Ryan Wolf, the Assistant Regional Administrator for Sustainable Fisheries. And Allison Purcell, who's the director of the Anadromous Production and Inland Fisheries Section. They're the ones who do the hatchery genetic management plan approvals. Also present were Phil Anderson and Chuck Tracy, the chairman and executive director of the Pacific Council. Chris Kern, the director designee for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and Peter Hasmer, the director's designee for the Idaho Department of Fish and Game. The agenda of the meeting was to answer any questions that they might have about the proposal that was described in the white paper and to provide an update of the Washington legislative process. Secondly, to hear from folks about their reactions and perspectives on challenges ahead if the Washington legislature greenlights some sort of funding level. And in particular, hear what the National Marine Fisheries Service folks are thinking about in terms of balancing salmon recovery risks with southern resident killer whale recovery actions. And then third, to brainstorm if there is any other benefits or intangibles that the people ought to consider as this would move forward. We did provide a short briefing to the group on the status of the Washington legislative process. And as you all know, there are specific bills on noise abatement and contaminant control, but no specific bill on increasing prey. This is to be dealt with in the Ways and Means budget process at the end of the legislative session. We talked about the white paper describing the proposal for about 50 million smolts, and the National Marine Fisheries Service folks thank us for the proposal and indicated they are receptive to considering it should the Washington legislature provide funding and policy intent to move forward. They noted that care had been taken to focus on areas where impacts to listed wild fish populations would be less than other choices, and that the genetic stocks proposed were those that would be beneficial to the killer whales the most. They also noted that some organizations might oppose any additional risks to wild ESA-listed salmon, regardless of benefits to the southern resident killer whales. NIMS was still considering what they felt would be the best package of measures from their perspective that could help the southern resident killer whales, but were watching closely what the Washington legislature would do on the two bills and the funding for prey. NIMS asked that should we get a green light on the immediate measures and the intent of a green light for the future, that we provide them with a game plan on what facilities and stocks would be the highest priority and what the sequence of events might be. They noted that some of the Columbia River proposals might be easier to process for an ESA clearance decision than the Puget Sound proposals. When we talked about funding from NIMS, they could not say anything concrete about our proposal that they contribute about 50% to this initiative, noting at that time that the 2020 proposed budget had not been released yet, federal budget, that is. And while one can't rule out something in that budget as the process moves forward, that maybe the 2021 budget cycle would be the next spot for a significant federal proposal for specific funding. However, there is some federal funding for increased hatchery production in the 2020 budget for implementation of a new Pacific Salmon Treaty agreement. From Oregon's perspective, they indicated they were receptive to being a partner on the proposal. And while they might be able to assist with production of multiple stocks, they have already done some initial internal work regarding logistics for the Willamette River Spring Chinook genetic strain and would like to discuss options further after the Washington legislature acts. Idaho was also receptive to being a partner as proposed and encouraged further dialogue after the Washington legislature acts. So all in all, from my perspective, I felt it was a positive meeting. At the coarsest measurement, NIMS and the other partners could have objected to the proposal as a bad set of ideas. They did not do so, consistent with their prior positions on some initial discussions. Rather, I was encouraged to hear from the National Marine Fisheries Service, Oregon, and Idaho that they were looking forward to hearing what the Washington legislature might do and how they might be involved in doing something positive for the southern resident killer whales in a way that provides some short-tailed benefits to depressed fisheries. So that's my report on that meeting.
Does anybody want to add anything, or was anybody else there?
This is Kelly. I was there. I think that was a good summary and reflects what we heard at the meeting.
Any further discussion on that or other commissioners, other ideas that commissioners want to talk about? Well, let's go on to Kelly then.
Okay, so I'm gonna provide a follow-up on primarily the hunting package we heard a lot about. So we got a lot of input, as you all well know. I'll note the meeting minutes you just approved had about 100 attendees, which is a pretty high number for us. We got a lot of good input. I think it highlights the importance of us actually making it out into those areas so we can hear directly from people locally. I want folks to know that we heard what they had to say, too. And so I've got some proposals moving forward. Partly I know there will be folks listening in who wanted to see our follow-up, so I want to set kind of my decision space, it's really your decision space, my space for making recommendations to you, particularly for the folks, the public that might be listening in. As you well know, there are no easy answers for any of this. Everything we heard, there are two sides to the issue, and I want to make sure we keep that in mind. Given that, we're going to have lots of controversy, so my space is conservation first. We need to make sure absolutely that we can back up everything we do in respect to providing conservation based on science, kind of a no-brainer, but also the public process. We're working hard to develop public trust. Staff here, I think, are sick and tired of my broken record of saying we can be 100% right on the science, and if we don't get the people right, we all lose, including the citizens. So that's kind of my focus going in. We also have our three-year package planning for hunting season. There's reasons for that. One, it provides a predictability to hunters who want to know where we're going, and people get into a rhythm of knowing when we're going to do big things. It's, frankly, a resource management issue. We want to do public process. We want to do it right. That's resource intensive. Those are the same resources we have doing the monitoring, biology assessment, technical work to support this. So we have to find the balance there. And that balance puts us on major changes on the three-year updates and more conservation-driven, immediate needs-driven decisions or simple decisions on the one-year basis. So we evaluated all that as we kind of thought about what we heard. And for today, I want to kind of focus on critical path things that we need some decisions today and other things I'll be pushing forward. I think we have space on some of those. So that's a long-winded intro, but I wanted to make sure folks knew kind of the sideboards I have around myself as I'm moving forward. And thanks to our wildlife program who put a lot of thought into this. I think, again, we took it to heart what we heard. So bears, we heard basically predators and deer are the two big things we heard about. There's a little more I'll touch on later, but so I'll start with, and what we heard, or what I'll summarize we heard in very simplistic terms is concerns that the population is up, opportunities are limited, there's inequities between the seasons on the east and west side. In this area, I think we have some room on the biology. There are fewer bear on the east side, but we take that into account. We manage based on harvest, particularly female harvest, and we're in the range we shoot for, or on a 10-year average, or actually slightly below that range. So I think that gives us some biological room to increase harvest over there. So the proposal I would have for you all is that we reconcile the east and west side bear seasons. So right now we start in August 15th on the east side with a one-bear limit. The west side, it's August 1st with a two-bear limit. We would make that statewide. August 1st start, same end date, November 15th, I believe, and two-bear limit. that would be a change. So this is where we get into the three-year, one-year, and the resources-driven. I think that's the kind of thing I think is okay in a one-year change. We did not have that in our previous public comment, so this would mean we would initiate a new public comment period, try to get the proposed rule out, CR 102, obviously contingent on your approval, on May 1st, and actually have you make a decision on whether this is the right path after public comment at the June meeting. That creates some challenges in that we need to keep going on the pamphlet to get it out, so we would issue the pamphlet with a statement in there that decision hasn't been made, and then follow up with errata sheets corrected sheets, updated sheets to make it clear that what the seasons are. So it's a disadvantage to not have that decision before the pamphlet. I think we have some room to move on this one. I think it's appropriate to move, and so we're willing to accept that cost of doing business. That would be my... the other thing we heard was a desire for spring bear seasons. I understand the desire. Again, we heard folks, that's a big deal. It's a controversial deal. That's the kind of thing I do not think we can evaluate in a one-year cycle. So that one, I heard folks, we will make a commitment to have that to be something that's evaluated in our three-year cycle. So just to keep folks in mind, our next three-year cycle, hunting cycle, actually starts season of 21. But our process starts next spring to evaluate that. I think that's the right time to evaluate the potential for spring bear seasons. That's going to be a major public process effort on both sides of the state. So that's why I would say that decision doesn't need to be made today, and it's not, I don't think, appropriate for a one-year update. I'll stop there if you have questions around the bear proposals.
Commissioner Thorburn?
Go ahead, Kim.
Bear hunting is by permit. Am I correct?
No. So this is strictly for the fall. Well, yes and no. How about that? This is for the fall hunt. The fall hunt is a general season. We do have spring tags. We just did the drawing a couple days ago. Did not draw, if you're interested, for spring bear hunts. And so we do have a limited entry permit system. That would not be changed by this for the east side.
Okay. So this is a general season. Thank you. That answers my question.
Are there any other questions for the director on that? I have a question, Director. It sounded like you're looking for a decision from us today. Is that accurate? We didn't note any decisions in our agenda.
I think this is within my authority to go. I shouldn't have probably said it as a decision, but I would like a support of that decision or provide the opportunity to redirect me.
Got it. Does anybody else have any comments or questions on that?
Commissioner McIsaac.
Go ahead, Don.
With regard to the spring bear matter, did you consider the increase in the number of permits for the spring hunt of 2020? You mentioned something about, making a major change would not be appropriate, but if there already is a season that has some number of permits, is elevating that number something that falls into that category of just too intensive of an analysis to try to take on between now and what you would have to put out for public comment by May 1?
I think we've already done the drawing for this spring, and I think that's appropriate for a one-year type thing. We can in next year's one-year update evaluate whether or not to increase that number. Mick, go ahead.
Yes, commissioners, this is Mick Copes with the Wildlife Program. And just to be clear, we do have several spring permits. We have about 400 spring permits at the moment up in the northeast part of the state. Currently, about 35% of those that went hunting are successful. And that not everybody that got a permit went hunting, but it's not like we're putting out 50 permits and harvesting 42 it hasn't taken factor with best rates and the number of permits we have out there.
Nick, you dropped out toward the end. Could you?
Sure. I'm sorry. So just to recap, we have about 400 spring bear permits out there currently in the northeast part of the state, and only about 35% of them of the hunters that go out are successful. So it doesn't appear right now that that's a big limiting factor. The number of permits doesn't seem to be a limiting factor right now.
Mr. McIsaac?
Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how you want to take this, Barbara, on reactions as we go through bear and all the rest of the species here. Maybe it's at the end, maybe it's right now. Let me just say I want to thank Kelly and the staff for thinking about this and reacting to all that public comment over there. So coming up with some alternative here that does allow for public comment and a possible decision, I think, is supportive. Of course, no one knows what their decision in June might be. We want to wait and see the analysis and hear the public comments. But I don't know if you want to get to a point of the commission considering a head nod on this proposal at this time or at the very end, or how you want to move through that.
Well, I think what we should do is let Kelly give us his reactions to the meeting. And if there's anyone on the commission that has serious heartburn or even opposition to his proposals as they go along, we should state it and then perhaps summarize at the end. Does that work for people?
Sounds good.
Okay. Keep going, Kelly.
Okay. I'm going to move on to deer, white-tailed deer in particular. What we heard were concerns around low populations, a desire to reinstate a four-point restriction, concerns about youth, loss of youth hunting opportunities, and concerns about a late season. Those are the summarized bullet points. So I want to emphasize in thinking about the testimony, I think a lot of people, and this is based on the side conversations I had with the public as well, think that we disagree or aren't hearing them that populations are down. And in fact, we do believe populations are down. There's lots of room for discussions on how far down and appropriate actions. But certainly we understand that populations are down. That's why we removed the antlerless harvest, the doe harvest. There's science on both sides on most of these issues. This one's pretty clear. The best thing you can do for a low population, at least as far as hunting is concerned, is restricted to a no doe harvest. That's exactly why we went with that. So we've got enough disagreement in the world out there. I think where we don't disagree, it's important to highlight that and not let it fester. So I just wanted to make that clear. So again, we did already in the package propose eliminating the antlerless harvest, the doe harvest. The desire for a four-point restriction, this is another one of those very controversial issues. This one gets more on the side of policy. The science is less clear. The doe science is clear. I think there's clear science on this as well, but it's debatable with folks. So my view is this is far too big to try to cram into this year for 2019 for sure. It's definitely a topic that I think needs to be fully evaluated with our three-year package. That's a wide open, whatever people want to do. So I think that's where we're at, especially as we are in a low population status, that this is something that certainly will be evaluated in the three-year package. It's possible that we could take a look at it for next year. I really don't think this rises to that level, only because of the demands it would take to do it and the fact that it's so out of sync with what people would expect. I would propose this is best left to being a valid concern, valid issue to address, but we address it beginning next spring for the 2021 season. On the youth harvest, so the youth harvest that we folks were concerned about in particular were doe harvest. You all have heard me again ad nauseum talking about my desire to make sure we create opportunities for youth, that we need to maintain our efforts on the recruitment side. In this case, unfortunately, that's exactly counter to the notion that on one hand, we're saying populations are down. We need to do what we can to increase them, therefore eliminate doe harvest. Yes, it's attractive for a youth hunt. It also goes completely counter to the decreasing doe harvest. Our estimates are just over 30%, about one-third of the doe harvest in these units is on the youth hunts. And so my proposal on that is it's, again, too big of a change for this year in particular. I think this is the kind of thing that's appropriate for a one-year package. I just don't think this is the year. So the proposal would be we stick with where we're at for this year. It's a complete elimination of the doe harvest. That gives us a chance to implement that for a season, see where that goes, see where our counts are. And as part of next year's package, evaluate whether it's time to try to create a youth opportunity for antlerless harvest again. We've also talked about when we do that, it doesn't have to be an all or nothing. Perhaps there's a more limited opportunity for youth harvest of does, that be a special permit or a shortened season where there's an allowance for youth to take those. I hear people loud and clear, this is something I would like to provide. I don't think we can provide it this year.
Commissioner Thorburn, if I could make a comment.
Go ahead.
So one of the issues that was brought up when we were hearing about the concern of lost youth opportunity was the 3R initiative. And, you know, that's being worked on nationwide, and I think there's a lot of learning going on. And one of the learnings that we're certainly beginning to hear over here, the Inland Northwest Wildlife Council, I think is kind of taking it to heart in their mentorship program is, so the first two R's are recruitment and retention. And in terms of the second one, retention, they're beginning to be evidence that the target for recruitment really needs to be dad more than youth, because if you take a young adult who hasn't hunted or maybe hunted as a kid and might be returning, they're probably more likely to continue hunting and then bring their kids into hunting than youth who doesn't come from a hunting family particularly. So I think that, you know, as we evaluate sort of access, that whole 3R discussion needs to be part of it.
Yeah, Barbara, this is Brad, just to follow up.
Go ahead, Brad.
I'll second that, Kim. I've been reading a fair bit about this on east of the Mississippi, what they've been doing, where number of hunters has gone down drastically in the last decade. And I think, you know, that's kind of your spot on that. So I think that would be worthy of further discussion.
Any response to that, Kelly?
I totally agree with it. I'm glad to report that my son-in-law just passed his field test this last weekend at my behest because he's going to help me teach my grandson to become that next generation. So I agree that dads are where we push it.
The mentor and everything. Yep. That's great.
So,
okay, well, let's keep going.
That last one was the last season, the late season harvest. I think that falls in the same category as the youth harvest. I think right now this is a very big deal. I've heard a lot of input from just some folks I know casually that a lot of people plan on that late season, jamming them now with the idea of potentially changing it. I don't think we can do an appropriate public process. I think that is the right kind of thing for a three-year package, and we can also evaluate whether or not that's something we may want to propose next year as the last of a three-year season package. But it's because I think it's not inappropriate for a one-year update, but it's inappropriate for this year given that we haven't started on it yet. That's my opinion on that one. That's all I had for deer, if there's input on that.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Go ahead, Don.
Yes, thank you, Madam Vice Chair. So for whitetail, it looks like in the aggregate there would be, you're not recommending any change from what we had on the screen in Spokane. That's how I'm jotting my notes down. Is that accurate then?
That's accurate. I think a little clearer commitment to what we will follow up on the next 1 year and 3 year packages. But for this season, no changes.
Okay, so my question is, as we move to April, and we think more about this and it gets down to a decision time, I would have a tendency to agree with you about the 4-point situation, particularly if there is nothing that comes out for public comment by May 1 for a June decision on changing the 4-point rule, that might be best to save for later, particularly since we have got some written comment that indicates it's not a unanimous perspective, that that's an obvious thing that needs to be done, that everybody supports. We kind of heard a little bit of that in Spokane, but maybe that's not entirely true. If we end up going with no change from the previous proposal, it would be no real reaction to the concern that populations are further down than whatever our current counts are, and that they're going to continue to go down, and don't take into account anything that Commissioner Holzmiller just said about factors that weren't in known by the staff as they put this together over the course of the winter. So I'm just trying to think out loud here about what might be possible if one wanted to do something that's a little bit more conservative. The late season or the regular season being shrunk would be one thing. Is that even on the table for April? Or if one wanted to pursue something along those lines, would you have to go to this May-June process?
So those were not contemplated in the previous, so I don't think they're part of a April decision making. I do want to say that this is no change from the proposal. The proposal itself had a pretty significant change in eliminating doe harvest. So we're maintaining, it's no change from the proposed change of no doe harvest. And Mick?
Yeah, this is Mick Cope. Commissioner, the season, to answer your last question first, the season for the late general season and the late or the regular season, those are seasons that are currently being contemplated because the youth is part of that rule, so therefore the antlerless permit, and those. The issue there is that nobody really knows about it. There's not been any indication to the public that there would be a change in their late season or a change in their general season. There was notice about the antlerless component of that. Even that came in late, as the director was saying. You know, we weren't contemplating that when the CR 102 went out back in December, January timeframe. But as we saw the evaluation of the winter, we did react to that and do have the significant, well, the removal of all antlerless hunting. So that is a change in reaction to new knowledge. But the other two seasons, you know, as the director mentioned earlier, the biggest lift you can get with conservation for deer and especially white-tailed deer is looking at the antlerless component of the population. That's the reproductive potential of that population, and so that's going to be your largest benefit. So between the biological benefit and the fact that nobody's really tracking that their late season or their general season could be significantly changed, that's why we're recommending that we would move forward with the proposal to just remove the antlerless harvest component.
Any other questions? Okay, Kelly, carry on.
Okay, so I'll move on to the most controversial one was the cougar concerns, and we heard concerns about increasing cougar populations, seasons, quotas, and conflict, primarily safety-type issues. Again, this is by far, I think, was most heated and most we had the most substance on input. This is an area that, again, is incredibly controversial, and this is an area where I think it's incredibly important that we get it right. If we don't get it right, whatever we do is not durable. We before I was here, but this department, this commission, tried to liberalize cougar quotas a few years ago and failed in that attempt through the process. That's just a fact I think we have to keep in mind, that as we move forward, we have to get it right. I don't think there's any way to do anything different than what we already have proposed for this season and get it right. We are absolutely committed to looking at those quotas and seasons in the three-year package. This gets back to my critical path. I don't have an answer on a one-year for a cougar. I think given the level of interest, it would be an incredibly intense public process to go through. Doing an extra one now to get it in place for next year gives me concern, but to be frank, I'm punting that one. I'd like to come back to you in April with a proposal after I talk to staff about, do we do the appropriate public process now so that we could get these in place for the 2020 season, or do we put that as part of the three-year package for a 2021 season? So I guess going in kind of the tenor where Commissioner McIsaac was on the last issue, that would mean no change for this year in Cougar. That means a commitment to definitely looking at quotas and seasons in the three-year plan, and a commitment to get back to you on the feasibility of looking at it in the one-year plan, given the urgency or desire from folks to get it done sooner. I think it's totally unfeasible, non-starter, to try to get something done this year. I don't think we could accomplish it, and if we did, I think we would be vulnerable to losing it anyway, which puts us in a deficit for the long-term management. So I'll move on quickly, because the last one is more on the conflict side. Heard loud and clear the concerns about interactions with the public and a desire to make sure the public feels that level of safety. So we will work with staff on the engagement with the public. I want to be clear, I think our staff are professionals. They are the experts. I want them using their judgment in the field. I think that's totally appropriate. With that, I think we owe them some sideboards and guidance that in exercising that judgment in the field, if they're in doubt, they should err on the side of removal for cats. We should be having a much more liberal attempt at removing cats. If there's a perceived concern for public safety, if there are depredations, I want to reserve the space for our conflict and enforcement staff to be making the call, but we'll make it clear to them that in making that call, any flexibility goes towards removal. So we don't get the situations where the folks feel like we didn't hear them, where we really could have removed a cat but chose not to. We should have a darn good reason for not removing it in those situations. That said, I want to reserve the space for those folks to be able to have to exercise that judgment.
Commissioner Thorburn again.
Go ahead.
I have some comments. Both, I'll start with public safety, and I also have some thoughts about moving forward on harvest in the future. I agree that it's not something that we can act on this year. So first on public safety. Most wildlife conflict is now handled by the conflict biologists. We did retain dangerous animals for enforcement, so they're sort of the first in line to respond to cougar and bear. And the most effective response that I hear about are actually when the conflict biologist or a biologist, sometimes it's the wildlife biologist as well, can accompany the enforcement person, because they have kind of two different approaches. I know this is a resource issue, but, in sort of looking at how we do respond to these situations, I would encourage as much as possible that it be the team that responds to these dangerous animal calls. And as I said, I really understand it's a resource issue, but I think there's great value when both approaches are brought to these responses. There's a lot of sort of outreach and education that the conflict person can do, and enforcement really has kind of a different approach. So anyway, that aside, in terms of harvest and just to kind of put out for the commission, you know, we have a policy on cougars and harvest that we maintain a stable population, and what that's been set up with this quota approach based on population density estimates on some now getting older research. I would just encourage, as we look at, as staff looks at that, to bring forward either in the next year's the final year's revisions, or whether it's a three-year pamphlet revision, that we really are presented with kind of a broad stroke approach to how we even establish harvest. Do we stay with this population density quota, or do we take a look at the way that most cougar harvest is set? And it's a huge discussion, not only for staff, but also for us as we move forward.
So, Kelly, response to those. One, currently we do try to send out a conflict staff and enforcement staff. That's kind of our default. Realistically, one's going to get there quicker than the other, but we will. It is a resource hit. Frankly, one of the things I'm thinking about more is, which is another resource hit, perhaps even bigger, is when's the right time to have those conversations? What I took away from that meeting over there, when somebody's fair project is lying dead on the ground, it's not the best time to give encouraging suggestions on how to manage livestock.
Good point.
But that means a follow-up, which means two trips for folks. So that's actually a bigger resource hit. But I think the idea that we have somebody that's standing there basically traumatized and trying to give them some suggestions is just, one, not received well. It's not perceived as helpful. It's perceived as criticism. That's what I heard. I think, and I'm not the expert. I'm smart enough to know I need somebody smarter than me on this. How do we provide that helpful, constructive input? When's the right time, and how do we do it in a way where it's actually people are in a position to be receptive to it and not resentful about it? But that will take another resource effort from us, commitment. Right, that, I shouldn't have said that until I've vetted it with staff, but that's what I took away from that input.
And on Commissioner Holzmiller?
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Jay.
Well, and kind of at the end of the day, Washington, for some reason, is stuck on this mountain lion theory that they have, and it's the almighty, there's no questioning it, of any shape, matter, or form, while every state around us uses a different quota. And that's the one problem I have with this whole deal, that the theory we have is chiseled in stone, cannot be questioned. And there again, I live out here in the boondocks, and a lot of neighbors around me. There are more mountain lions seen, tracks seen, everywhere you go. It isn't a big issue. And still, they act as though if we happen to shoot one too many mountain lions, Earth's going to spin off its axis. That's the part. And then when we start getting into this public safety issue around schools and stuff, and we just cannot because we're at our quota, we're at our quota. We have mountain lions down in Dayton, Walla Walla area, where there never were. You know, probably back 100, 200 years ago there were, but for recent history they're not, and now they're a common sight. So I guess I'm just going to go back and still question the way Washington manages their mountain lions. And that's where all these decisions come back to, that and it just is a burr under my saddle. Because to me, when you get mountain lions coming in next to schools, you get mountain lions coming in and killing people's 4-H projects, it should just be a slam dunk. We're going to put human safety way above everything else, and especially when we're using it, is, to my opinion, a flawed mountain lion management system to begin with. So hopefully this is a step in the right direction, but I think we're walking a really fine line with some really bad science. So I'll say that and be quiet.
So Commissioner Pulsmiller, this is Kelly, and it also responds to Commissioner Thorburn's input. On the second part of Commissioner Thorburn's input, the stable population management metric and an encouragement to take a broader look on how we manage, that would absolutely be part of the three-year review, or whenever we do this review, is we will come to you explaining where we're at, other options, what other states are doing, and make sure that we give you the full suite of options. That's part of the reason I think we need it's counterproductive, but we need to go slow to go fast. I think because we need to do all that, we need to take the time to do it right. And that's at least next year or the three-year package. And I think I was trying to get at exactly your second part, Commissioner Holzmiller, on public safety, on depredations, that we basically are exercising. There's not a question. There's not going to be putting up resistance. We're not trying to maintain a population with that decision. That's a public safety decision, always stands on itself, and we will react appropriately, which, you know, in those situations you described would mean removal.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Go ahead, Don.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about the Cougar situation as well, because it was the most compelling and voluminous testimony we had in Spokane. You know, it's a question of, well, when do we, I think we need to react. I don't think there's any question that if we just continue to do the same thing, that would be a bad move. So when is the best time? You mentioned that this has been tried before. I wasn't around then. I presume that the staff has got a good list of lessons learned for that process. It didn't seem to come up in the first three-year process that I've been involved in, which was the most recent one. I don't recall cougars being talked about that much. And when I think about how much might have changed in the world of cougar abundance from the time of the previous cycle, which it did not come up to now, we had some testimony over there from one gentleman who said his job was to drive the woods extensively, and so he was out there and he used to see maybe one cougar a year, and he saw seven in one day recently. So I think that we do need to do something, and when I think about waiting to the next three-year process, I almost wonder if we had a big cougar issue laid on top of all the rest of the stuff, what that would mean for the three-year process for everything else. If we put a three-hour agenda item for cougars on top of the meeting in Spokane and then again here in April, there wouldn't be room for too much else. And I don't think it would be responsive in terms of the urgency part of it. So I'll just weigh in as someone who's in favor of hearing more from our director in April about a separate process. Maybe that does justice to the rest of the business that is outside the world of cougars. It might take up a lot of time in the next three-year go-around, including the whitetail business and general prey reductions over there that goes to mule deer and the rest. I think maybe it would be good to open the cougar policy. Commissioner Thorburn's made some very good points about we have a cougar policy that has a maintain the population thing that we just spoke about, a little challenge on that. So opening the cougar policy in itself would be an extensive thing. Maybe a different policy just for the Northeast sector, where maybe the things are a little bit worse there than they are anywhere else. But if there was something that started as a separate process and it was taken carefully and properly with full public participation, maybe a lot of work at the Wildlife Committee where people can take their time and look at different alternatives and do something in the off year before we go into the big one. I guess I'm kind of in that camp right now, that I think we do need to do something more than the normal process of waiting, just because that public testimony was just too compelling in Spokane, for me at least.
Barbara, this is Jake, and I say one more shot really quickly.
Sure thing, Jake. Go ahead.
Thank you. And there again, I thoroughly understand where Kelly's coming from on a lot of this, and I guess Kelly and I have talked about this the other night privately. As long as the policy going forward is cut and dried as far as conflict, that it is dealt with and dealt with swiftly, and we don't just put lip service to this, I'd be more than happy with that. But I think we need to make certain that that's how it ends up, that it is, in fact, that we don't start excusing a bunch of them away. And I come from this a little bit different than most of you, because I have dealt with this. We used to have mountain lions come in and get in the sheep, and there was always one excuse after another. Finally, be honest with you, we just got to the point the game department was the last ones we ever called, because you knew all you were going to do. So going forward, if we can correct it and truly deal with it, I'd be tickled to death. It'd be a big, big, big start in a positive direction. Thank you.
Any further comments on that? Well, this is Barbara. I also have a comment. I was also sort of taken aback by the amount, not only the amount, but the passion in the testimony when we were over there, and all the pieces sort of fit together with the prey and the predator issues that we have. Mule deer being a big one, people said, you know, it's too late for them. We don't even see any of them anymore. I like Kelly's proposal, especially the part about public safety. And this gets sort of back into management, which we shouldn't tread very deeply. That is your job, Kelly. But I'd like to see us, if we are going to be much more aggressive, is probably the wrong word, but if we're going to focus more on public safety right now as we decide whether and how to adjust the quotas, I'd like for that to have something. I'd like for us to be able to say that clearly and not have to always have the, but of course it's a resource issue, kind of out. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is I'd like to see us, if we went over there, we heard of a need, if we agree with that need, and sounds like everything points to the fact that that's real, I'd like us to redirect some resources and be able to say, hey, this is what we're going to do in the short term. We're going to try to take another run at cougars, whether it's a separate process or not, with a little bit more thought. But right now, here's what we're going to do. And I'd like to see some of the resources be directed. I'd like to be able to offer something tangible. And then the backstory to that was not just that the department was unresponsive, but there was a lot of upsettingness in the quality of the response. And I assume since you were there, Kelly, and there was a bunch of people there from Region 1, that those discussions were taken to heart, and somebody's figuring out basically the public relations part of our job.
Yeah, so we did hear that, and are taking some internal steps. So I would, my thoughts are really similar. So I would think, I'll be honest, I'd like to manage that element and the response to public safety and depredations as an agency management issue. So what I would like to do is come back on the April, it's just a few weeks away, with a more thoughtful process on where we go with cougars. We've got some good input here. And also I would say that, you know, a memo from me to staff talking about our sideboards and how we manage this would be in order, and including hopefully some direction on the societal side of it as well as the public safety side of it. So I'm rambling here. Basically, some direction from me on how we address the issues that you all just brought up, as well as a more firm proposal at the April for how we manage cougar in the more general season cougar hunting in the next year.
This is Commissioner Graybill.
Go ahead, Dave.
Just a quick comment. I appreciate what Kelly is telling us. I just wanted to mention that this meeting was held in Spokane, and so we heard from constituents here. If we would have held this meeting in Omak, we would have heard the same story about cougars in that area, or the Madhow, or the Eniat Valley. And so it's much broader than just Northeast as a problem with cougars. I just want to bring that up, and I support further research and how we are doing cougar management, and just explain a little bit that it's much broader than just the northeast corner of the state.
Just to reaffirm that, Commissioner Graybill, this is Kelly. I heard about this in every single regional visit I made, the cougar concerns. So I think we may be on the right track. People don't believe we are. We need a thorough process to evaluate that.
So, Commissioner Thorburn, this is Barbara again. Is it okay if we take basically Donna and Kelly's suggestion to make this sort of front and center in the Wildlife Committee at some point, whenever that's appropriate?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Very appropriate.
So, how are we doing? Do you have is there more from you, Kelly?
I think I'll just touch on one, maybe two. On the hoof disease, I'll look to Mick. We're still evaluating that. So we heard, you know, we have the confirmed incidents in the Blue Mountains. We're evaluating whether or not to do a statewide requirement to leave hooves in the woods. We're not sure how much that really helps. Conservation, you know, approach would mean that we go ahead and do it anyway. And Mick, I'm gonna look to you on the whether we exercise a precautionary principle,
yeah,
or we wait.
Great, thanks, Kelly. This is Mick again. And the director's correct. We wanted do this a thorough job of thinking through this. We've been bringing to you occasionally new areas on the west side when we've had detections on the west side, and this detection in the Blue Mountains is, you know, concerning, and there is one component would be that kind of precautionary principle and go ahead and do something statewide. One of the things that we wanted to do before making that recommendation or and which may not be able to be done between now and the April Commission meeting is work with Washington State University. They recently brought on professor there that is leading their wildlife disease interactions. Her name is Dr. Wild, and we haven't had a chance to circle back with her. She's taken the lead on some of the research on hoof disease, and so we want to be in concert with the university on this. And so when we come to you in April, it may be that we haven't had a chance to fully close that loop, and we may ask to postpone that decision. But know that we're thinking about this on, you know, from multiple perspectives, and trying to get you the best recommendation we can.
Commissioner Thorburn, I have a question.
Go ahead, Kim.
So this is a hunter naive question. How difficult is it to take the hooves off and leave them behind? Is it a disposal problem?
It's not difficult.
It's a cautionary principle approach.
Everybody I know that hunts elk tends to do it on foot or on horseback, and they tend not to bring out the hooves anyway. But so it's not an effort limiting thing. But it's a change. And when you make changes, people, you know, 100 people are going to call me now and say, well, I do bring those out.
Right.
So it's just a matter of balancing that. I would say this, if we don't have any further idea, we would probably go ahead and recommend for that reason that we just do it anyway. But we'd like the opportunity to check in and make sure that that doesn't seem contradictory to what might be coming out of WSA.
Okay, well, let's keep going.
Last one, and this was getting off the hunting side a little bit, but on the range riding contracts, we heard a lot of concern about not having RFQs in place because turnout is happening. At that point, it was 50 days out. I just want to assure you that we are about to go out with our new RFQ, but the more important element is that our existing range riding contracts are valid through June 30, and they would actually cover the turnout anyway. So we have range riding contracts in place. We'll find budget for that. We're struggling on that, hoping to work with the legislature, but we won't let that get in the way of making sure we're providing appropriate non-lethal. So valid concern. We need to get the RFQs out, but as far as not having coverage for this spring turnout, I don't think we have a problem.
Well, I want to echo what everybody else said. This is very well thought out. Thank you, Kelly. And sort of thanks to the staff, but also the other commissioners. Speaking of being naive, when I've been on this commission about 2 years now, and I had no idea how hard of a job it is, number one, but just the intensity of the level of work. And when I hear about all of you going off and doing these day-long, two-day-long, three-day-long meetings outside of what we do, you know, in our regular meetings and these phone calls and all the phone calls in between, I just want to appreciate everybody. Just one little point of personal privilege here. There's no answers. There's no right answers to any of this, and I just appreciate the amount of work that goes into trying to do our job and balance all the different approaches. So on that, I have one more thing, which is that I think there might be a better way to do these conference calls, and we are still in the last century on phones, and I'd like to ask, not for any urgent response or anything, but I'd like to ask us to consider whether we should update the way we do these. There's webinars, there's Skype, there's other ways that would make these calls a bit less cumbersome and possibly even speed them up. So I guess this is for Kelly. If you have technical people there that have some options or know what other agencies are doing, I'd like to hear some of them and have the other commissioners hear them as well.
We certainly have technical people here, and I will look to them to use that expertise to help us. I do agree there are probably better ways of doing this.
Thank you. Is there anything further for today? Oh, wait, we've got a whole other agenda item, which is the April agenda review. Does anybody have comments on the April agenda?
Commissioner McIsaac.
Go ahead, Don.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. A couple of comments on the April agenda and one comment on the year at a glance. We weren't able to get to those in Spokane. The draft agenda for April shows a Fish Committee meeting, but yet to have a topic. I think we're up for a decision point on the Willapa Bay situation. And so I guess I'd suggest to the Fish Committee Chair Carpenter that we ask if the staff could give us a preview of the Willapa presentation to the full commission at the Fish Committee, and that the Fish Committee consider making a recommendation there. On Saturday, this shows up as agenda item number 25, and it's the last thing of the day before the debrief. And the meeting goes to 12:45, and things that happen at the last agenda item on Saturdays haven't always had the best success of being done in a careful manner while everyone's around the table completely the whole time. So I'm going to suggest that we switch agenda item 23 and 25 so that we can take the Willapaw matter up right after open public comment, with hopes that if there is a significant amount of commissioner dialogue after public comment about what to do on this decision, that we have everybody around the table and we can take our time to do it. Agenda item 24 is not a commission decision. Agenda item 23, which might be the last thing of the day, is not a commission decision. But I think for these important decisions, we're going to take public comment, and we don't know how many people might show up. There might be a lot, like there was a year ago on this one, that we don't crowd out the time when the commissioners have to actually make a decision and talk amongst ourselves about the pros and cons of doing this or that. That's my suggestion on the April meeting. And very quickly, the year at a glance for June. I'm going to presume for the sake of this discussion that the legislative session is over by then. And if it is, to have an agenda item where we get a briefing on what happened, particularly with regards to the budget, and if there are some difficulties that come out of the decision on our budget that talk about it needs some sort of policy level decisions on priorities and reactions, that's enabled by having an agenda item in June for that.
Is there any response to either of Don's suggestions?
Vice Chair Baker, this is Commissioner Carpenter. I have talked to, but I will talk to Ron Warren about your comments, Don, as it relates to the Willapaw, and see where he stands on that.
Is there any objection to swapping out item 23 and item 25, which would have us do Willapaw straight after public comment, and then end our meeting with commercial fishing guide logbook requirements? Well, hearing none, then I think that we'll do that. Tammy, can you think of any technical or other reasons why we should not switch that out?
No, I cannot.
So that would mean that we would, no, it doesn't. We would still have public comment on, Grays Harbor. The only thing that I can see as a concern is the same concern Don has. If we do have a room full of people on Willapaw, that might push the two smaller but still important issues into trying to squash them into a smaller timeline. And if there is public comment on Grays Harbor, people come and they're not going to want to hear that, you know, they have 15 seconds to talk. But I guess that'll be up to Larry to manage the meeting so that doesn't happen.
Thank you very much.
Well, I think we might want to consider some contingency plans if that does happen.
Another thing I think that everybody should consider is we're probably going to have a lot of Columbia River discussion during our open public input both days.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just another little thing to factor in.
On a different topic, Commissioner Thorburn.
Go ahead.
To point out, this is probably going to change hands, but the discussion has been going on with me. The big committee has kind of struggled with our time, finding it difficult to have a very alert discussion. session after a long day on Friday. So we're going to try a big tent committee meeting on Thursday. That's an issue with the fish committee. That's always kind of been their time, but we're trying to not have complete overlap. So I just want to point that out to big tent committee members. This is a trial to see if it works as a better time. And then for the wildlife committee, we are talking about a couple of agenda items that will probably fill the time. The first is more discussion on, where we are with the rules and their adoption and things that Kelly talked about today. And then the second is hunt contests, something that we've kind of had before us for a while, and we want to get it on the agenda now. So Jay and Barbara, we're just finalizing that. I included you on an email this morning. If you've got anything else pressing, let me and staff know. And then the final thing for the entire commission, we are looking at scheduling a Wolf Committee meeting as well, but not directly in this time period. We're looking at a couple of days before having a teleconference, and so this is a heads up to Jay and Barbara, the members of the committee as well. We're going to get a heads up briefing probably at the same time that there's going to be public a release as well on the annual Wolf report that's on the agenda, because it's kind of open the PSR process and start the scoping, and we, the Wolf Committee members, need to have a discussion about whether we want to provide some ideas to the full commission at this meeting during the annual Wolf report regarding the scoping and opening the PSR process. So just heads up for Jay and Barbara, just to let the commission know what's going on in those areas.
And if I can just add for that Wolf Advisory Committee, it will need to be a special notice to the public. So the only topics that will be discussed are what's listed on the agenda. So just a reminder, when we get that date settled on, we'll need to make sure we allow enough time to get that notice out to the public and all that kind of stuff. So.
Great. We're working on it.
Okay.
Thank you for the heads up, Jim. Go ahead.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Oh, go ahead, Don.
Yes, thank you. A question about when director would talk about this business, about the initiative on bears, and where we would talk again about what to do about the cougar management plan and the cycle and all of that. Is that something that would happen under the director's report, or if this discussion here essentially finalizes this agenda and it goes out to the public? I'm just wondering how all of those interested public who are wondering what happened during this call about the possibility of, the folks will wonder whether or not there's been a decision to take up the four-point rule in April. There'll be others who want to know what about bear being decided in April. And so I wonder how that communication is going to go out there. And I'm, of course, concerned a little bit about our image, that we do have some responsivity to what we heard in Spokane, but also how does this actually play out? It's not an agenda item as it stands. So when would that happen, and what's the best way to optimize that communication?
Kelly?
So the most urgent, I'm not suggesting the others are not important, but the most urgent is the communication on the bear, and that will go out separately with our, we've already done the CR 101, so we'll make sure people recognize. We don't want that to be a hidden comment period. We need everybody to know about it. So that one we'll make a very overt public announcement on. The others, I was looking through, it's not on the agenda. I would suggest somewhere in the hunting. I'm talking and reading at the same time. I'm not doing either very well. We need to schedule a specific agenda item for a proposal on cougars in particular, I think.
Let me, well, while you're going through your papers here, let me also suggest that you have a director's statement on the Columbia River decision that we heard a little bit about actually yesterday at the Policy Review Committee. I wonder if it might be useful for you to have that kind of, some sort of a statement like that, that would be targeting the folks who testified so heavily on the other side of the mountains. That would be a positive thing to say, like you did earlier in this call. We did hear people. We heard four different things. We understand it's a big concern, and here's the game plan, just so you know we're just, it's not falling on deaf ears. I wonder if that might help communicate that, because I think it's an important positive message to get out there.
Yeah, I think I agree completely. I think that is part of the director's report. And the cougar we could put into that, but it's got so much energy on it. I think that'd be insulting to some folks that it's buried in a director's report. That's why I think it needs to have a specific agenda item, probably at the beginning of the hunt packages.
Yeah, excuse me, Madam Vice Chair. What I was talking about was the written director's statement on the website about Columbia River. That if that is an opportunity to speak in a positive manner, that we heard you in Spokane and we're doing something, please take a look at the draft agenda for April, or look at the news release for bears or whatever it is, that would be a way of emphasizing that we did hear people over there. And then during the meeting, if it's a separate agenda item for cougar, I think that's probably a good decision where it exactly fits. Even if we have to go over a little bit on Friday, I would suggest that somewhere in the middle of all that hunting business, that we have that out there.
So I apologize. I misunderstood the original. I understand what you're saying now, and I will work with staff to do that. I think we can couple it. We can use it to put a little more energy behind your comment period as well. So we will work to do that in a director statement on the web.
Okay. Anything further from anyone? Hearing none, I will adjourn this meeting at 9:59 and look forward to talking to all of you soon. Thanks.